You are listening to TLRStation.com.
Your Family Matters is a talk radio program with expert information about family law issues and various dispute resolution practices and other services concerning the law and how it relates to your family. Because your family matters. Host Cindy Morin is a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. And now, here is your host, Cindy Morin.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Tenacious Living's radio talk show, Your Family Matters. My name is Cindy Morin, and I'm a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group. Your Family Matters is a program brought to you, the listener, about all matters concerning the law and how it relates to your family, because your family matters. Today, my guest is Carrie McManus, and she is from Peer Support for Abused Women. And I want to thank you, Carrie, for coming in today. And she's here to talk about court supports for victims of domestic violence. So, Carrie, tell us, from your experience, how serious of a problem is domestic violence here locally in Calgary?
Well, I think, unfortunately, Cindy, domestic violence is a very serious problem locally in Calgary. And we know that it's a problem that continues to grow. So within the past year, CPS has experienced a 14 to 17% increase in calls coming through to police. We know that Alberta has the highest rates of domestic violence and domestic violence-related homicides. And we know in a global perspective from the World Health Organization that one in three individuals, or women in particular, are affected by domestic violence. And that's talking just specifically about those individuals and not looking at the ripple effects and who else is affected by that. And those are things that, unfortunately, we just can't even begin to measure.
So other people that are affected, I'm assuming, would be children and even employers because of people, you know,
Absolutely.
Not being able to attend work and whatnot.
Absolutely.
So when you use the term domestic violence or domestic abuse, what does all of that encompass? Because there's more than one type of abuse.
Absolutely. So what we often think of and how we describe it is cradle to grave. So it's a full continuum. When we talk about domestic violence, we talk about experiences of childhood abuse, dating violence, violence within committed intimate partner relationships, violence within families, elder violence. So full across. And then also within many different categories. So we talk not just about physical violence, but emotional abuse, sexual abuse, spiritual abuse, financial abuse, and the list goes on and on.
Right. So when we're talking about court supports that are available for people who are in a domestic abuse situation, what types of abuse do the court supports address?
So court supports will address all types of abuse. They get divided up between how it falls within the court, but most programs are there and available to support all types of abuse.
So when people are seeking a court outcome for being in a domestic violence situation, when I think of that, I think of them mostly attending because of physical violence, because that's the thing that we can prove. How would somebody go in with, you know, your support, prove a case that has no physical violence, but has some, you know, emotional abuse or verbal abuse involved?
Right. So it would, depending in on whether that they're looking at something that's a criminal basis or a family basis, and how that was going through the courts as far as the sort of legal requirements would be dependent on those sort of particular cases. But for us, the idea of a court support is to be available and to be acknowledged that while you're in court and they may be looking specifically at only this type of, we know that there's much more that's happening within that situation.
Right. So essentially what I'm hearing is that courts can be fairly limited with what they can deal with from an evidentiary perspective, but you're there to support the victim, to show them that despite the fact that we have limitations within our justice system, we recognize that some of what you've suffered has gone beyond what the court's capable of dealing with, and that's where you step in.
Absolutely, and to advocate on their behalf, to be able to have that as part of a case if applicable within that particular situation, because we know that there are, you know, as you said earlier, those bigger ripple effects, and how did those ripple effects of that abuse affect this individual, and therefore how can we help to support them in all levels and have that recognized by the courts?
So now we've heard of the cycle of abuse, and I think many people have heard of it, but can you tell us how the cycle of abuse occurs and what, if anything, the court supports do to try to help break that cycle?
Mm-hmm. So the cycle of abuse is, you know, the ongoing perspective that we know that abuse doesn't happen just in isolation. We know that it happens in a cycle that continues on, and for many people across a lifetime. And I think the thing for us when we look at and think about court supports that's important is to recognize what their role is within their opportunity as supporters, and that their role is not necessarily to end or to put a stop to that cycle. Their role is to work in collaboration with all of the other agencies and all of the other supporters, and that through that they can help them, the victims, to manage the violence that is within their lives. So by, you know, helping them with things like emergency protection orders, you know, imprisonment, whatever that is, it may not break the cycle, but it helps that person to manage the violence in their life at that moment, while they can figure out what breaking the cycle would actually look like for them.
Right. And so many, I'm going to say women. I know that there are men that get abused. In fact, I've had two clients who were men that were abused by their partners. And in fact, it was quite sad because the resources available for men are so limited. So mm-hmm. it was very difficult for me as a lawyer to try to get them connected because there wasn't a lot out there. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that abuse tends to happen to women more so than men. Mm-hmm. And so when I use the term women, I want, you know, the listener in particular to know that I'm not in any way discrediting the experience that men have in this situation. But what types of things should individuals pay attention to if they suspect that they might be in a domestic abuse situation? And the reason why I'm asking is because I know a lot of women, and these two men that I've had experiences with, who didn't really think that they were in an abusive relationship. They couldn't identify with that.
Mm-hmm. And we often find that people have a hard time with the terminology of identifying as a victim or someone who's being abused. And so what we often talk about is thinking about for individuals, for themselves, what does healthy feel like for them? And does this feel healthy? And starting to have questions around that, and reaching out and looking for support. So if something's happening and you think, I'm not okay with this, this doesn't feel okay with me, I'm not comfortable with this, or this isn't the experience that I see through my friends, through my parents, through someone else, to be able to start talking about it and ask questions, connect with friends, connect with family, and connect with the services that are available in the community. Because it's hard to say, here's a warning sign, because for everybody that will look slightly different. And it's really important for people to know for themselves, this doesn't feel healthy, and to be able to speak up and say, this doesn't feel okay, and know that there are services that will be able to help them to figure out what that looks like then.
Well, you know what I find, just from what I've seen in my own practice, is sometimes, you know, women will come in and they'll get emergency protection orders that band-aid a situation very briefly, and then they come back on quick turnaround for the matter to be heard again to determine if that emergency protection order should continue. Mm-hmm. But even within that short time frame, a lot of times these women end up going back to their partners mm-hmm. in between, in the interim, despite the fact that they've been ordered no contact. And then more often than not, they either appear in court and, you know, and want it vacated. They want the order to go away, or they'll just let the order lapse. What I try to do in my practice is I try to extend that returnable date as long as I can. And I try to get my clients in counseling before we go back to that date to try to get that little bit of space that they may need to actually want to break away. So How difficult is it for women to actually recognize that they're in that kind of situation, that it's not their fault, and that they should leave because it is unhealthy? Because I think a lot of times these women, unhealthy starts to feel normal.
Absolutely. Yeah. Unhealthy is what you know. And so if that's what you know and you're comfortable with, then it, that makes it harder to leave because, whether you feel fulfilled or you have all of the things you need, it's what you know and it's comfortable. So having people that you can talk to that can allow you to see that there can be something outside of that, I think is really, really beneficial. So being able to talk to people outside of that situation who can say, you know, healthy might look like, and offer some suggestions and talk about what a positive relationship would look like and that sort of thing can help women to be able to see that there are other options, that they don't have to be where they are, just based on that's their normal and that's what they know. But it can be difficult, and it depends on if that person is ready to be in a place where they can hear that. And sometimes it takes, and we know the stats say that it takes many, many times for a woman to leave an abusive relationship. And it's because it's not as simple as saying, this is good and this is bad, so you should just choose to be out of it. There's so much more going on that you have to be willing and patient to be able to work with people and see that these are, you know, high emotional situations. And, you know, people are often in relationships because there's love, and that love doesn't just go away because of the abuse. And you have to be able to process through that, and recognize that that takes time.
Well, and the thing that I hear from clients a lot of the time too is, my partner isn't always like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're thinking about the good times that you have, and you don't want to lose that because you don't want to have to grieve that part of the relationship, it's hard to leave. And I remember hearing a counselor say once regarding domestic violence that it's almost like a moth being very attracted to a little nightlight, and it's, there's darkness everywhere else around them. They can't kind of see the forest for the trees. So they're attracted to this little nightlight, and they can't seem to go away from it. But if they got away long enough and just, you know, moved through a bit of that darkness, that there's brighter lights out there that can give them what they need more so than the little nightlight. So that's the analogy that was given to me when I was trying to understand, you know, what is it that compels them to stay? But it's a safety thing for them.
Absolutely.
So yeah. Even though it's a dangerous situation, it feels safer for them to stay than actually leave. Am I right?
Absolutely. And one of the most dangerous times can be in leaving. And so it's something that, you know, we see that. We see behaviors from abusers escalate in leaving, and so that can be really dangerous. And if you know that, if you have that stat, if you know of people who have experienced increased violence in trying to leave, then that can be another factor in saying, I am just going to stay. And going back to your earlier point, I think we hear all the time from women that this doesn't happen all the time, that the good times are really good. And that does make it harder. If it was just bad all of the time, then it becomes easier to say, this is not where I want to be, and this isn't healthy for me, and I deserve better. But when you have those times where it's really good, you think, if only we could figure out how to capitalize on this and have this be bigger. And it's hard to see that's not going to stay, and that cycle is going to continue.
And do you think that dynamic is the same for men? Because in my, like I said, my experience is very limited. I've had two clients that went through that situation. So I'm basing everything that I'm saying here on those two. Mm-hmm. And the feedback that I got from those two clients, and the perception I got was, it wasn't about, you know, the good times and staying for the good times. It was more that they couldn't reconcile with the idea that they were actually being abused at all, and that they're the man, and there's, you know, that somehow they should tolerate this and put up with it. One fellow in particular, he was a big guy, You know, he was a police officer, and he would come into my office, and you know, his t-shirt would ride up, and I would see marks all over his arm, and I'm like, what's up with that? And, you know, and he would laugh it off, and he'd say, oh, you know, she went a little crazy on me last night. And I'm like, no, that's not right. Like, that's not right. And it was happening in front of the children. But he didn't really talk about, you know, oh, well, she's not always like that, and there's all these good times. Instead, it was kind of like, well, you know, I can handle it.
Right.
But clearly he couldn't, because it was happening, and you know, he was trying to deal with it and kind of tiptoe through the tulips, if you will, and walk on eggshells, like many people who are abused do, to try to not upset the abuser. But do you find with the men that you work with that I don't know. Do you guys even work with men at your organization?
So at our organization, we work specifically with women, but we work in partnership with people who do work with men. And I think that idea of stigma is really prevalent. I think it's prevalent within both male and females. And that idea of, you know, if I leave, if I go to court, if I continue this emergency protection order, then people are going to know.
Yeah.
People are going to know that this is happening in my private world, and I'm not okay with people knowing. And that becomes often a reason that we hear for people going back, for people staying, or for people being really hesitant within the court system is, if I was to call the police and charges are filed, then somebody else is going to know what's going on. And I'm not prepared for that. So I think men and women both experience that. I think for men, it's from a different perspective. It butts up against that idea of masculinity, and that if you're a masculine man, then that wouldn't be your experience. And so the stigma is greater, I think.
And why do you think people today still keep it so hidden and such a secret?
Mm-hmm. I think we still have a belief that it's a private issue, that domestic violence happens within a private home, and that we as society don't have a role in creating change around that. And we have a belief also, I think, around what kind of people experience domestic violence and why they would experience it. And so to see that it's happening to your neighbor makes it much more real, and makes you realize that it happens to everyone, regardless of age, race, gender, economic status. It happens to everyone. And that is scary. I think there's something scary about recognizing that I can't distance myself from it and say, this doesn't affect me, because it does affect everyone.
Yeah. So if somebody finds themselves in a situation where, yeah, they see the red flags, this doesn't feel unhealthy to them, they want to get out, how does someone access court supports if they feel that they are in a domestic abuse situation and require help and need to take that first step to get an emergency protection order or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. So within Calgary, we have a network called Connect Family Sexual and Family Abuse Network. And it is a one phone number that connects individuals to all of the different domestic violence services that exist within the city. So shelters, counseling, legal, everything. And so that phone number is 403-234-7233.
Can you just say that one more time?
I can. It's 403-234-7233. It's a 24-hour service, and we recommend to everyone that that's a really great place to start. It's an over-the-phone, non-judgmental, you can call and ask questions. If they're not ready to make any commitments to anything, they can just call and gain information and learn all about the different services that are available and how they can be supported through this process.
Great. Thank you for that. So tell us a little bit more about what peer support for abused women does in general, and also the court support program that you guys have. What does that look like? How does that work?
So our agency provides support for all women who are experiencing or at risk of experiencing domestic violence. And we do that in a number of different ways, through group programs, as well as through individual programs. And then a few different programs like our court support and our informal supports. So our agency works from the belief that women will access and will know what they need to get out of our programs. And that works within all of them. If women come to us for court support and they say, I just want someone to come and sit with me while I meet with my lawyer, we can do that. Or if they come and they say, I want someone who can, I need to figure out how to advocate for this or how to have this, then we can look at how can we support them in that way. But we allow for women to be able to say, this is what I need, this is how I need to be supported, and we do our best to meet them where they're at.
And what can I do as a family law lawyer to best support my clients that are in that kind of situation?
Well, I think the first thing that I always say to anyone who asks me that question is the most important thing that we can do is we can believe that individual's story, because in that moment, that is their truth. And there's so much power in them being able to recognize and feel heard and validated for their story. And then the other thing I always like to say is that we can let them know that it's not their fault, that no matter what has happened before or after the abuse, they're not responsible for that. And then let them know that they're not alone and that there are services available. Again, I would recommend that they call Connect in order to access all of those domestic violence services, but really to know that they're not alone, that other people have been through this and that there are supports to be able to help them to move and to figure out what healthy looks like for them and be able to have a healthy life.
And when you say phone connect, I just wanted to clarify, do they also connect men with services within the community as well? So it's for both men and women that can contact Connect?
It is for both men and women. It is for anyone who would identify as experiencing abuse. Or if someone says, I'm not sure if I'm experiencing abuse, it's a great venue to be able to ask those questions and get some clarity. So it's open to anyone.
Great. Now, at Peer Support for Abused Women, you have a court support program. Do you know of any other agencies that also have court support programs?
So for anyone who's going through or experiencing anything within the criminal system, there would be Homefront, which does exclusively criminal support. Then we work with Calgary Legal Guidance, and they partner with us on the court support program, and that would be for family. And then there are a few other domestic violence agencies who offer different types of court support, and that could be from having a volunteer lawyer come in to be able to answer questions for women who are in shelter, to people who go and sit with them. There are not a lot of them, but there are a few sort of one-offs, and Connect would have all of that information.
Now, I would imagine that funding is always an issue, like it is with any sort of social program in our province. Who funds these court support programs for some of our listeners that may want to make a donation?
So many of the programs are funded by the United Way of Calgary and area. There's also funding available through the province of Alberta, through the Human Services Ministry. And then lots of the programs are funded through private donors, anonymous donors, individuals who maybe have experienced this themselves and now feel like this is a way for them to be able to give back.
Right. Now, how do you guys measure the success of the program?
How we would measure that ourselves would be if that individual feels like they received the support that they needed. So were they able to access the accurate resources, the accurate information that they were looking for? And are they able to move forward in whatever way that looks like for them?
Okay. One of the things I wanted to ask as well is, oftentimes people think that these programs are only for people from a low socioeconomic background or people who don't have lawyers and are self-represented. Is that true?
It is not true. No. So our programs are accessible to anyone. Anyone who's experiencing violence and is looking for support can access programs through peer support.
Okay. And just because we have a few minutes, well, not even a few minutes, a few seconds left, can you just kind of give an overall about what the Peer Support for Abused Women program is and what you guys do there in addition to the court supports?
So we run individual and group support for women. And we believe that having women come together, share their stories and their experiences, allows them to be able to learn and heal from each other and move forward.
Great. Well, in closing, I would just like to say thank you very much, Carrie, for coming and talking to us today and being part of our show. If you want to find out more about our guest or our firm, Resolve Legal Group, please visit our website at www.resolvelegalgroup.com or call us at 1-866-RESOLVE. Now, before we leave, do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share?
No, I think the most important thing is if you're talking to someone, if you are experiencing abuse or you are talking to someone and you think they might be, to know that there's support and help available and you don't have to go through this alone.
Great. And just before we go, if we can have that number one more time for Connect and also how our listeners can reach peer support for abused women should they want to reach out to your program.
Absolutely. So Connect again is 403-234-7233. That's 403-234-7233. And our program is available at by calling 403-234-7337.
Great. Thank you so much. And please be sure to tune in next week when we will be speaking on the topic of our domestic violence series part 2, which is all about community services for both victims and abusers of domestic violence. And our speakers next week will include Carrie McManus from Peer Support for Abused Women again, as well as Christine Berry from the Calgary Counseling Center.
Your Family Matters is sponsored by Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services, with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. The unique delivery of client-centered holistic services that Resolve Legal Group has become known for is structured to address not only a client's legal matter, but this model also ensures that families are bridged with differing community supports based on an individual's and family needs. It is the firm's philosophy that with the right supports in place, clients become empowered to make sound legal decisions when files are led to resolution. It is the firm's desire to continue to grow and expand this model so that holistic practice becomes the norm in family law rather than the exception. Contact us at 403-229-2365 or visit www.resolvelegalgroup.com for more information.